This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
Tell you what, James, it was a bad day at the office. And I thought that was that. And let me tell you, James, it was not. I was brought in with the head of the council, the head of the department, the head of environmental health, and my tutor, and was basically told, you are lucky that we aren't just finishing your term with us straight away.
How do I deal with someone who works late? What I don't want to do is shut down if like, say, Pete doesn't get out of bed till 10 o'clock, but actually works till 7-8 o'clock. That's his life rhythm as well as his own personal rhythm. Then who am I to say that's not right and you have to work in these hours? Like, true flexible working, I think, is quite hard.
Workload isn't work, it's your life. Your business as a small business owner it's not just 9 to 5. I genuinely believe the greatest skill that any safety professional can have is reflection. But if we don't reflect on our actions to be the best versions of ourselves, I don't think we're doing the profession justice. Reflection and recognition of not only who we are professionally, but who we are personally. And I tell you what, James, I absolutely love all the conversations that we have, because it is the most respectful that I think I've ever had in a career. And it's because of how much I feel that we take the time to understand each other as bringing our whole selves to work.
2 or 3 weeks without an ops meeting, systematically going through everything and going, how are they? What are we doing? How are they? What are we doing? Where are we there? In my head, that immediately becomes, we are overwhelmed and we are struggling and everything is shit and we are failing left, right and centre because it's an unknown. Exactly, vocalised problems. I fucked up. This is not working. We're going to readjust.
When we look at who we are from a safety professional's point of view, we work in uncertainty to a degree. Great.
Yeah.
If we didn't have uncertainty, then we wouldn't have a workers imagined versus workers done debate. It would just be work.
I have no intention of being interviewed ever again in my entire life, unless it's for like, this is your life. Should we do the trumpet? I feel like that's going to stay now just for this, because I feel like I have to say it.
I think we need a jingle, James. It's rebranding safety time.
Yeah. So have you ever watched Critical Role, which I'm letting everyone know about my really geeky side now, but have you ever watched Critical Role?
I haven't. No, James, what is it?
So Critical Role is like, it's like the premiership of D&D.
Yeah.
So it's just a live play YouTube channel. So you just watch it and it's just them live playing D&D. So I just literally sit and watch 3 hours of people just talking and role playing, which sounds weird as fuck if you don't know what it is, but anyway, so they have an amazing like jingle new thing that they'd all sing themselves, because they're all voice actors, so that's why they're the premiership, because they're all voice actors and they're all geeks. So do you know Ashley, I can't remember her name now, Ashley something. So do you ever play Last of Us?
No, you, I'm aware of it. I haven't, because I haven't got PlayStation, James. Xbox for life.
Massive gamer and you haven't played Last of Us. It's like the best game of all time. It wins awards all the time for that being the best.
I'm going to wait for the TV show to come out with Pedro Pascal, and then that'd be fine. I'll live vicariously through the TV show.
Have you watched the show, the TV show?
No, I just didn't know the TV show.
Oh my fucking God. Right. Okay. Anyway, so she's in the TV show, but in the game, she is the voice of the girl, of the young girl in it. And I'm not going to give any spoilers. Just, you need to play that game, right? Anyway, you play PC, don't you?
Yeah.
You can get it on PC, I'm pretty sure.
James, I'm feeling slightly judged here.
I am judging you. This is like the best game in the world. You're a massive gamer and you've not played Last of Us. Like, I'm genuinely considering putting this on your performance review.
I was going to say, I can just see my exceeding expectations just dropping, dropping down. It's just going down.
So let's set you some targets for next quarter.
Gotcha.
Targets for next quarter. Play Last of Us 1 and then play Last of Us 2.
I look forward to filling in my CPD reflective statement for playing The Last of Us 2. That'll be fun. What have you learned from that?
Anyway, so they're all professional. They're all professional voice actors. If you've watched anime, played games, their voice has probably been in that game, sure. All of them. So they're all professional voice actors. Most of them can sing as well. So they sung their own, like, beginning, whatever you call it, like intro. It. And it is so good. It's so good. And that was what I was thinking about on the first episode of Me and You, when I was like, we should come up with a song. That was my attempt to get even remotely close to that, of which it didn't.
But I like it. Right. By episode 5, James, I've made an action. Sing intro song. Got it. Perfect. James, in the art of obviously modern business and modern professionalism, I might outsource my section to Tom Cardy, who I think is generally one of YouTube's greatest kind of like innovative song makers. Wonderful. So, yeah.
That's the guy who also did a D&D version. That's a
perception check.
So good.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen of the podcast audience, if you have not heard Tom Cardy on YouTube, please do watch him. Some of his songs do include a couple of explicit words in there as well. He's Australian. He doesn't pull any language, really, foreign Australian. But he is hilarious. Tom Cardy, definitely get on it. Definitely get on it.
Oh, that's a... You're short and no one likes you. That's so good. I love that. I love that. That guy is just hilarious. Anyway.
So, James, health and safety.
Oh my god. Yeah, so anyway, their intro is really good, and that's what we need. But Sherry has been working quite hard on the podcast and probably deserves a shout, actually. Rebranding Safety is growing like really quick this last like few months. I think a large proportion of that is Sherry forcing us to be regular, and also what she's doing with the editing is amazing. But she's basically taking inspiration from a lot of big popular podcasts who take loads of clips from the episode and do like a hook of all of those little clips in the beginning. So she does that. She does like all of that at the beginning, whilst it's like a kind of rocky, American rocky kind of guitar riff playing. And then it kind of ramps up and ramps up and ramps up. And then boom, it's like the podcast kind of Rebranding Safety show thing. And then boom, into the episode. And it looks slick. But obviously you've watched it like 20 times, Peter, so you should know.
I have indeed. Of course I have. Like genuinely, I think it's really good. I tell you, do you mind if I do a couple of shout outs for a second as well? Because it's actually the safety podcast space is growing at the moment. And what's been quite nice is actually hearing a lot of people that have said, well, I wanted to start a podcast, but it's been down to the like sort of Rebranding Safety. That have kind of pushed it through. So, I mean, a couple of new ones that I've seen, and these aren't to say that all of these have been inspired by Rebranding Safety, but obviously, like, it's just to kind of grow things as well. But Peter Thomas has just launched his Safety Tech podcast as well. He's bought Peter Thomas MSc, I think, on LinkedIn. We've got the Safety Angels that have done theirs as well.
Yeah.
I know that Colin's coming back into doing more episodes on the Interesting Health and Safety podcast.
Is he? Well. OG, coming back.
Coming back into the game. And there's, oh God, James, I hope I'm not going to get this wrong. Isn't there, I could have sworn I saw one the other day called, is it Two Bald Guys? Or is it, I hope it is called Two Bald Guys. It's been a while now,
but Two Bald Guys is essentially Eva Tix, so that's Eva Tix's podcast.
That's it.
Yeah, Julian and... Shit. Oh no, I'm sorry. I forgot your name.
But the Two Bald Guys podcast, definitely want to check out. Yeah, and Christine Harris.
I've been on that. They're a lovely pair of guys. It's a right laugh. I enjoy it. They have some really good chats on there. Then the Slice podcast, Safety Labs, that's really good as well.
Yeah, that's been really good. We've got Speak as well. Can't forget about Speak with Crystal and with Elisa. And there's obviously Christian Harris with the Slip Safety podcast, which, again, amazing stuff. There's the Slip Safety podcast, Safety. I literally, it's on the, Jesus Christ, isn't it? I'm going to literally Google it because I don't want to get the name wrong for it. Christian at the moment is doing an amazing job of putting everything out. But because he's got so much coming out, I keep forgetting off the top of my head what it's called.
Hasn't Cam Stevens
doesn't have a podcast, he needs to get one. For those who don't know Cam Stevens, he is literally safety tech and digital transformation, based in Australia, and without a shadow of a doubt is a genius, like absolute genius. So definitely connect with him and literally just follow what he does on LinkedIn, especially. It's absolutely incredible.
I think it's good. I think I've had a few people in the past being like, so I get quite a lot like people like, think about doing a podcast, would you? Like, I know you probably like, would you be right to like give me some advice? And I'm like, yeah, cool. I quite enjoy it, like talking about like the journey of rebranding safety. Like, I know everyone's probably heard me talk about it too much, they roll their eyes, but and some people will kind of say, oh, you know, they're your competition. Do you really want to get more people? Like, the more people podcasting, the better it is for people that podcast, because it more. The audience grows because the content producers grow, which tells all the systems and the analytics and that, hang on, there's something going on here. We should send more people over there. So it's just good for everyone, right?
Absolutely.
I would say it's not easy work, would be the only thing I would say.
It really isn't. So like, for example, I mentioned before about Christian's podcast, the Safety and Risk Success podcast. Again, it's really nice to see that we've got so many podcasts associated with so many different elements of safety. Like, for example, Peter Thomas's is kind of much more focused on the safety tech side. You've got the Safety Angels that was doing kind of like, I know that their intention at the start is to kind of say, we'll take a look at individual topics and kind of just go through those from that point of view. Obviously, we've done a huge amount of podcasts now in rebranding safety from loads of different topic areas, James. It's wonderful that we're seeing such diversity come through in the profession. Like, absolutely is. It does raise, though, quite a nice topic for us to talk about today, which is something that, again, it's no reflection on any of the podcasts that we've just spoken about before, any one of these individuals on LinkedIn. But it's very easy when we've got so much content coming out there, right, to focus on the good things, the things that obviously everyone has done well. But James, we're human, right? We're not perfect. But no one ever talks about the stuff that went wrong, right? The times that as safety professionals, we maybe didn't get it right. So what we were kind of thinking today, let's talk about our stories, James, the times where we might not have got it exactly right first time, right behind it. I mean, what are your thoughts on the topic?
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. Like, shout out to you for coming up with the idea. And I think as well, like, we've been interviewing a lot over the last couple of weeks for a new consultant within Risk Fluent, and we've been kind of asking those questions. And kind of when you said, what about this for an idea, and using the questions that we use in the interview to frame the podcast, I was kind of like, oh, so that's a fucking banging idea. Well, we're like grilling all these people about, oh, I said, tell me a time you did this, tell me a time you did it, and like just sitting there all privileged, like not having to answer these questions, especially me. Like, I have no intention of being interviewed ever again in my entire life, unless it's for like, this is your life. So it's stupid. But like, I have no intention of being interviewed ever, so I will not answer those questions. So kind of, I was like, yeah, that's fair enough. We're asking them to tell us these, why don't we do them as well? So I think it's kind of cool. It would also be cool to whoever's successful in this role to kind of, they listen to this podcast and hear our version of it as well. And I really like that. I think that's a really nice idea.
No, perfect. And now what we're going to preface this for a second, right? So obviously we've been doing interviews type of thing. There's a classic interview answer technique called STAR, which is STARR. So it's situation, task, action, results, reflection. So basically, what was the situation that you're in? What was the task that needed to be accomplished? What actions did you individually take or take as part of a group? What were the results of those actions relative to the task and the situation? And how did you reflect on it? Now, we're not going to kind of like go through a pitch perfect STAR response, right? This is really just about us telling some stories behind things. So if you are thinking, oh, I'm going to get to hear an interview, like a fake interview for a job with James and Pete, no, you're not about to. You're about to hear, though.
That would be a good video, actually. I think
it could be a good video, but not for right now, James, because I'll be honest with you, I'm getting sweaty palms at the idea, and because I can say no, I'm saying no, James. I don't want to do it.
Like, you interview me, you're a good interviewer. I'm shit. I just get too into the conversation. James. But you're good at it. You're like, question, question, question. You're like, Have you ever watched Star Trek?
I have. I'll be honest with you, I'm a massive Trekkie. James, I grew up on the next. For those of you of a certain age, you might remember that BBC Two used to do The Simpsons at 6 o'clock, and then it used to follow it with Star Trek The Next Generation at 6:30. And genuinely, that was some of the greatest times. Don't get me wrong, they did kind of Voyager and they did Deep Space Nine, but for me, it was always TNG. That was genuinely, that is peak Star Trek. Like, absolutely.
Do you like the new Star Treks?
I actually do, right? It takes it in a different direction. Yeah. Star Trek was all about the kind of ideals of exploration without necessarily the limits and the sanctions associated with standard capitalism, right? Behind it, it was literally the entire universe is kind of more about exploration, but not exploration through warfare or sort of like military power, in my kind of opinion. That was kind of what I believe that Gene wanted to accomplish with it. New Star Trek kind of retcons that a bit, especially from the first kind of like the first film. It's great action films, really good, but I think they've lost a bit of the heart of what Star Trek.
Do you like the new Star Trek series though? So you're talking about the films.
Because
we're going to eat up all of the time, and I don't want to do that. But like,
I tell you what, do you mind if I say something on that for a sec, right, James? When I think about looking at things like Star Trek, so much science and actual like innovations and inventions have been inspired by science fiction.
Yeah,
there's a huge, if you like, genuinely, there's so much inspiration that comes back through the power of media.
I think Arthur C. Clarke's science fiction is a precursor for fiction. I think, if I remember rightly,
that's an amazing quote. Amazing Boom. Quote. Could not agree more. I tell you what, when you look at stuff like iRobot. And there's an amazing scene in iRobot, and it's have you ever seen the film iRobot?
Oh yeah.
First of all.
Right on my street.
Right. So the interview scene with Will Smith and Sonny, and you've got Will Smith interviewing the robot to test his humanity, and he basically says, what are you? You know, can you write a masterpiece? Can you draw a masterpiece? Can you write a symphony? Can you do all this and that? And Sonny turns around to Will and says, can you? And it was what a powerful kind of reflection for a second when you've literally got this kind of like modern dystopia now of AI creating the artwork and humans creating the machines right behind
it. Do you know what
it,
I like, love that Star Trek do though is that everyone portrays the future as dystopian, and I think Star Trek portrays it as hopeful, I love. I think it's beautiful. I think Star Trek is absolutely gorgeous. I think Star Wars does a bit of that as well, but Star Wars is more focused on the... I think if you get into Star Wars, there's a big story behind it, and I think there's a lot of lessons, but ultimately it is very much about like good versus evil, whereas Star Trek is about hope and exploration, which is something beautiful about that.
It absolutely is. There's a really good point in here just for a second about representation. Mm. So genuinely... when we see people that look like us, that sound like us, that kind of we relate to at some level, be it kind of physically, be it mentally, be it whatever it's going to be as part of that, we feel represented from that point of view. I genuinely think that one of the big issues perhaps with modern health and safety is that in such a contemporary world of mass media information, this huge sort of like TV, internet, video culture, is there enough representation of health and safety as we want to see it in media? And I'll be honest with you, James, I don't think there is. I think that if we look at science fiction as a precursor to fiction, every single time we see health and safety portrayed on like actual like media and on fictional media, it's the clipboard warrior. It's the barrier. It's the no.
Yeah. I think this is probably a separate conversation, and we might just fucking double down on this and talk about the interview thing. But I think that how safety can be portrayed in media is by portraying work as should be. So a really good example, did you watch The Rig on Amazon? Was it Amazon?
No, that wasn't the Deepwater Horizon.
No, it's a series, like a sci-fi thing, but it's all based on an oil rig.
No, I haven't. Does that have the guy from, what's it? The BBC police drama with Mary Joseph and the Weed Donkey.
The copper one, yeah.
Yes.
Gotcha. Yeah, so that guy. Anyway, so in there, I can't remember what is it. I think he's climbing up a ladder on the rig, a fixed vertical ladder on a rig, and he's got his harness on and a lanyard. Now, if you're doing that, anyone kind of works, you have twin lanyards, right? So you're never not attached, right? So if I remember rightly, he only has a single lanyard. So he goes up, takes his lanyard off, puts it up, goes up, takes his lanyard off. So the point where he takes the hook off the lanyard off the ladder and moves it up, he's not attached. So if at any of that point, a bird or whatever goes up, which actually happens. So that's not a spoiler, but somebody, well, it is, but it's like a minor one, right? So somebody falls off. And I was like, wouldn't happen if you had twin lanyards. But like for me, it's like that's standard on a rig. Like that's standard anywhere that you climb any more than like a general ladder, right?
It's standard at Go 8, James.
Exactly. So right, that standard like climbing is twin lanyards. For me, if they'd have done twin lanyards there, that is a successful portrayal of safety. That's what I portrayal, not betrayal. Portrayal. The current one is a betrayal of safety. but if they did it properly, for me, that is a good portrayal of safety, is just proper work with successful risk management. And I'm not, there is another scene where he purposely disconnects to like go and save someone or something. I can't remember what he does. For me, that's irrelevant. That's part of the danger, is showing that they're taking a risk. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the normal climbing of a ladder that he does in like two scenes. That for me is like, let's do that properly. Let's do that how it should be. Because if you were talking about historical reflection, you would put so much work into like what would the outfits actually look like in medieval England and stuff, but like why don't you do the same for like what does work actually look like on a rig? Let's have a look at that. For me, that's good safety.
I totally agree. I don't know if you follow him on LinkedIn, but there's a really good guy to follow called Andy Harris, and I don't know if you've followed him at the moment. And was it MSS safety?
We've been trying to get him on the podcast for ages. We just can't seem to get it at the moment.
Incredible. So for those who don't know Andy, I've not met Andy personally. I've just literally followed him on LinkedIn because I was like, wow, holy cow, you look interested. But he does a lot of motorsport safety and film safety with vehicles in. So just genuinely follow him on LinkedIn, have a look at some of the stuff he does. But I tell you what, James, even if there was like a documentary or something that followed some of that type of stuff that could just show actually what does safety look like in these situations? I tell you what, I'd love it, because you could just point people that were interested in the profession to some of that stuff and say, yeah, okay, it might be really exciting and that's a little bit of an outlier, but the principles behind it, like this should be safe.
You're preaching to the choir here. I really want, so I pitched this to somebody once and I never got it off the road, but I would love, if I had the time and resources to do it, rerunning safety, to do a YouTube version of like what used to be like seconds to disaster and stuff like that, where we really just get into stuff that's gone wrong. But then also like a spin-off series of that is like just real work. So we, like, can we just go and look at work? And like, I would fucking love to pitch to Netflix one day, can you make a series called Rebranding Safety, where genuinely we just go out to some of like the most boring workplaces and some of the most exciting, dangerous workplaces, and let's fucking talk about what real safety is, like real risk management. That for me, I think a lot of people would really enjoy that. As a TV show.
I totally like it, James. I mean, what you've heard of, Inside the Factory, right?
Yeah.
We could. We could do that. We could do that way better for safety, James. Right, okay, Ruth, sure. If you're listening, Zoe, if you're listening, hit us up. We're there. We're ready. Literally, come see us. We're here for this 100%.
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah, sure. Anyway, right, come on. Let's go. We are well over. We've been
over. Right. Okay. And
people are going to be like, are you actually going to fucking talk about safety at some point in this podcast?
Let me bring it back then, James. Let me bring it back. So as James has said, we've been doing some interviews. We've been going through various bits and pieces. Now, as part of the way that we structure interview questions, we've gone with certain themes that we kind of wanted to talk about. I'm not going to go through all the themes as part of this, James, but literally to pick out a couple that we might want to tell some stories about. Okay, so we've got communication and relationships, workload and organization, setting direction, decision making, delivering sustainable results or KPIs, leadership and management, and training and development. So these are kind of like, those are like the topic areas, not the questions, it's just the topic areas that we've got questions within. So I'm curious, James, have you got any stories, right, that you want to share? I mean, can we start from the top, if that's all right?
No, I'm going to say I've got one ready to go, but it's not.
All right, go for it. What topic area does it cover?
I think it would sit mostly in set and direction. I can't specifically remember the question as set and direction, but...
I can tell you the question for set and direction if you want. That we've got in. So, I mean, to be fair, setting direction is more that we kind of wanted to know about. It's been about maximizing business benefit. So the question in this case was, tell me about a time when you refined plans to maximize business benefit. What was the context and what was delivered?
Okay. Yeah, I can do that. Great question, Peter. I can recall one or two times, actually. That was my interview voice. Go on, what?
Hired. Straight away, James.
Hired. No. I was going to take us off piece again then. No, right. So this is actually in RiskFluent. So we had a customer that approached us about a very specific thing they wanted to do in the business. And we were dead excited about it. So what they wanted to do was essentially get us in to help improve their pre-shift briefs. Now, I'm mega passionate about pre-shift briefs. I think they're... huge, huge opportunity for risk management. There are a huge opportunity for improving human factors, for error reduction, like influencing behavior. Just it's an absolute gold mine of potential. So I was like, yes, I am here for this. This is going to be so cool. And then they were like, the next thing I'm really passionate about is utilizing technology to be able to essentially record that conversation and convert that into a document. So we approached RiskTalk and we were kind of partnering up with this project. Now, we kind of planned it all out based on the brief from the single person that we were talking to at the business, had the project, the trial of RiskTalk. We were working really closely with RiskTalk and we had the training sessions and the workshops all planned out. And we started delivering them. So we started delivering the sort of to the business. I'm not going to give you the context of the customer. Normally, that's probably fine. In an interview, yep. I would, but I won't just in case. So we went into these sessions and we started getting some feedback of like just kind of challenges and contextual problems that were going to be like, that's not going to work. And people were really nervous and we're getting this real like, just negative nervousness. Like everyone was like, yeah, I get it. And I think this would be really cool, but this. And we always like a but, do you know what I mean? At the end of the conversation. And we weren't getting anywhere. And it was interesting. So I was like, this doesn't make sense. And a couple of people sent us some extra information, like documents and stuff. And I was like, oh, do you know what? We're talking about doing a pre-shift brief here, but actually what we're starting to see now is that there is already a distinct lack of consistency on the pre-shift briefs, but also a distinct lack of consistency on the information that flows into the pre-shift brief, which is vitally important to get a good pre-shift brief. That information flow that goes into it, which gives you the topics, so to speak, or the structure or the framework for the pre-shift brief, it didn't exist. So what I'd gone away and reflected, and essentially what I had to do now was go to the customer and basically say, we had gone into solution mode when we didn't really know the problem. So I had to completely change direction of this project, like halfway in. And I was really nervous, really scared to have it. You know, this was early doors, RiskFluent. I was really scared. It was a big customer for us back then and has been for a while. And I was like, shit, how are we going to do this? So I just kind of, for lack of a better phrase, kind of pulled my big boy pants on. I just had the phone call and said, I actually want to completely change the scope of the project. And what I want to do is just spend time out in work, understanding work is done, and then produce you guys a project plan and a kind of contextual report on my learnings and come up with some solution. And they were like, yeah, that totally makes sense. Let's do it. And it was fine. Essentially, then what we did was we spent a lot of time on site learning about work. We found out that essentially we were right in what we thought, that inflow of information, that risk management of information, job planning of information going into the pre-shift brief was essentially non-existent. We also knew that we found out that multiple different customer streams that they had created a lot of different complications where customers demanded very specific ways of doing it. And we were like, actually, what we'd originally gone to do actually right now wouldn't work. And we pretty much just stopped that, and we changed the whole project for the following year to then focus on aligning and streamlining their risk management and job planning together. So to this date, we still have not delivered the pre-shift brief because we haven't got to the point where the kind of planning and risk management leading up to that is ready to be able to deliver an effective pre-shift brief, if that makes sense.
That it does. Out of everything you've described there, I mean, what, obviously, like you said, it was really early in the time from a risk flow point of view. Totally get that. What was the thing that surprised you the most about what you thought could happen versus what actually did happen? Like, what would you say, if you're trying to distill it down to one piece, what's the key bit? What was that key turning point when you were like, shit, this isn't what I expected?
I think one of the... we had one very particularly vocal person in a session who at first I thought was just being a bit of a dick. But then actually what turned out was that he just had a problem with it, and those problems were actually valid. And I was kind of, that was a big key moment that kind of made us stop and reflect. And then the big surprise, if I'm honest, was that I felt like a bit of a hypocrite because I talked about going into solutions mode before understanding the problem on rebound and safety so many times, and like in so many videos and mentoring of other people, I kind of said, make sure you understand the problem, like let's understand the problem. And it was always something I'd always thought I was quite good at. To then kind of see how I was distracted essentially by the eagerness to deliver something I was passionate about. You know, as a big customer, you know, there's a lot of things going on, early doors, we were kind of under pressure to generate some revenue for the business, all of that stuff had massively influenced me, and essentially kind of I had my own kind of workers done, workers imagined moment, I suppose.
Yeah. See, I love it. We as safety professionals get so caught up at times in wanting to deliver the outcomes from the work that we do, that it can be easy just to not place the emphasis on the problem, right? Yeah. Not to kind of look more at the problem in detail, not to kind of work out the context behind it in ways that we probably should do. And I think to a degree, James, we're all guilty of it. I mean, God, over the years, I've had similar type of things where you, somewhat one of my old managers said to me, Pete, he said, your problem at times, right? You just need to just remember JFDI. Just do it. Right?
I'm just funny because I think we've had that conversation a couple of times.
Well, there's two things, James.
Sometimes, James, it's not JFDI.
I know. But there's two things that have jumped out right to me throughout my entire career. And it's things that I know that I always need to focus on. Right. First one, sometimes better is better than best. We can strive for perfection. We can strive for the best outcome, but actually the best outcome isn't what's better for the business right now. The business just needs an iterative improvement step to get them a 10% of the way rather than waiting for a 100% solution. That means that they're stagnating and they're paralyzed at 0% to start with. And that's always been a key reflection of me through the years. The second one, as you'll be very familiar with, sometimes, James, why say three words when five words will do?
You text me that the other day, I think.
I did, because it's still the case. Jesus Christ, Pete. Sometimes the best business benefit that you can deliver is just being more concise.
And but then you I'll know start, what, so, everything's a trade-off though, right? So what kind of attracted me? I know you're still telling your story. I want to interject because I feel like we're bashing Pete Jenkins a little bit at the moment. And I feel like it's fair just to, is it one of the things that attracted me about you joining the business when you first approached me is that actually I'm kind of the opposite of you. So I'm kind of like, impulsive, like JFDI, I like solving shit in the moment when we're like dead under pressure. Like that's where I thrive. That's what I love doing. The way you're kind of talking about it, like three words is like instead of five, like that's me. I'm a three word. I'm a one word kind of guy, really. But like I'm minimal. But actually, what I needed in the business was a Jenkins. So sometimes, especially recently, there's been a lot of JFDI. So you're probably like, well, can I at least at some point have five words, James? But like, which would be a fair challenge. But sometimes you need both. And I think actually knowing what you have and what you need is very, very important as a leader or a manager. It's to be able to acknowledge that Pete is not me. And that is exactly what we need in the business, would be my thought process.
I think that there's a lot of truth to that, James. It's very easy to hire people that we see ourselves in and we see as being exactly like us. But actually what's best for team dynamics, cognitive diversity, growth and development is not only hiring someone that does think differently to you, but providing them the space and the opportunity to actually act upon that. Like you wouldn't just hire someone that's opposite to you and then force them to work within the exact confines that you work in, because you're going to get 10% of that person. If you know that when you've hired them, 90% of their strengths sit outside of that kind of rigid structure.
On that note, can I ask you an interview question then? Following up.
Yeah, go on, James. Yeah.
So, Peter, tell me about a time when you a piece of communication that you have developed or rolled out, it's not quite landed in the way that you thought it would.
Right. So, I tell you what, I'm not going to answer it in an interview style, but I'm going to make a couple of reflections right to start with. Communication has massively changed, I think, especially since COVID as well. You know, we've gone through a point where there's a lot of people working from home that have embraced digital means of communication. There's a bit of a, perhaps it's not maybe like an informal science-backed survey result that I'm going to give here, but it's really interesting seeing how different demographics communicate. I know that the youngest demographics, actually, quite a few of them in my circles really prefer doing voice notes, which for me, I actually find really nerve-wracking because I say a lot of words and I often trip over myself at times. So doing a single take voice note that will instantly send when I've finished recording it is absolutely fucking terrifying. So I'd rather send a message or send an email. When I first started, my first job outside of university, right, was something called Graduate Ambassador. And it was basically going into secondary schools and colleges to sell higher education. It was effectively a B2B role in the sense that I had to sell to these institutes to get me to come in and deliver these soft skill training development sessions. And I'll be honest with you, James, one of the conversations I had with my manager was literally, I'm scared of picking up the phone. But I wasn't scared of talking on the phone. You know me, I can talk for days, but what I was actually scared of was rejection.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot easier to look someone in the eyes and have a conversation with them and come back from a negative situation, which I couldn't do on a phone call. It wasn't in my strength skill set. So I was actually quite afraid of doing it. So I actually really preferred either seeing people in person or literally trying to do something on an email. Now, don't get me wrong, emails are great, but I once really fucked up with an email, like really messed up. And it was in my first proper safety job. And there was, I won't kind of give the full context away for a second, but there was like, 8 different departments that were involved in an event that had happened. And in an email where I included every single department in this, I said that there was a mistake that was made by a particular person that shouldn't have happened because we should have known better. Right. And literally I sent it and was like, should not have sent that. Should not. Didn't know about message recalling. Didn't know any about that type of information. But I've done goofed here. And then I got a phone call from the person being like, this is completely unacceptable. And I was like, I had to agree with him. I was like, yeah, no, I totally respect what you've said. I genuinely totally appreciate that. I went to my manager, explained the situation, and they said, you know, you're going to have to go and apologize. So literally I walked up to their department into their office and literally gave them a very sincere, heartfelt person-to-person apology. And literally, I'd reflected throughout the day as well and said, look, it was the wrong thing. I blamed the individual rather than looking deeper into the process. It's called your integrity into question. It's called your professionalism into question. And it shouldn't have happened. It literally shouldn't have happened. It was my own, through want of a better phrase, I didn't use this exact one, but it was my greenness, basically, to responding in writing to a particular event that had occurred, and my own inexperience, I think it's probably the best way of doing it, that I didn't, at the time I was writing it, it didn't feel the wrong thing to do. And then as soon as I sent it, I knew it, but it doesn't change the fact that it was sent. It doesn't change the fact that it's gone out there. The business itself is a very relatively small business, right? So everyone that was involved had found out about me apologizing, and literally it just had happened. But I'll be perfectly honest with you, James, this happened in, I won't give the exact year away, but if I tell you that it happened over 7 years ago, and it's still something that I think about, like, regularly. You know, like at night when you're closing your eyes and your brain goes like, hey, remember that time that you did this? Right? It still comes up. So that was a time that I'd completely messed up, right, on a particular email. I can tell a different story as well, if you're okay, like with another communication for a second.
Go on.
Okay, so I really messed up once. So I don't think I'm going to get into.
You mentioned none of this in your interview to join Risk Fluent
because you didn't ask the question, James. No, the main. I'll tell you what. Just to quickly on this for a second. I genuinely believe the greatest skill that any safety professional can have is reflection.
For sure.
It's the greatest trait that we can have. If we don't reflect on our actions to be the best versions of ourselves, I don't think we're doing the profession justice. I really don't. And I'm not trying to, I don't want to sound out there by saying that, but it's the entire basis of health and safety is modern management systems based on a cyclical loop of growth. Plan, do, check, act. Or technically speaking, plan, do, study, act as part of it. It favours action, reflection and improvement. And there should be no reason necessarily why we aren't applying that to ourselves.
Yep.
So a lot of stuff that I'm saying.
Short-term reflection as well. Like, so we've had probably two quite difficult conversations since your time joining the business where either we've disagreed on something or whatever. And both of those times we have stopped the conversation, left it for like 2 or 3 hours to reflect on it with the clear intention that we will be continuing this conversation in 2 or 3 hours. And I think those couple of hours have actually enabled those conversations to be resolved in both cases. So that even that short-term reflection is really powerful.
No, I absolutely agree. And I think that there's a couple of things that fit into that. The first one's ownership, first of all. Self-awareness, reflection and recognition of not only who we are professionally, but who we are personally as well. Yeah. Recognizing any biases that might come into how we actually communicate and the kind of either the methods or the content and the context and the tone, all of this type of stuff that fits into it. And how we dynamically respond in the moment. And I tell you what, James, I absolutely love all the conversations that we have because it is the most respectful that I think I've ever had in a career. And it's because of how much I feel that we take the time to understand each other as bringing our whole selves to work. And genuinely, for anyone that's considering, well, what's the best way of like landing communication that delivers, understanding who we are as our entirety and understanding and respecting each other, I think is a key part of that massively. That very much fit into my own naivety by not really accounting for that in that first story that I shared. Conscious of time, James, so I'll make the second one very, very quickly. But long story short, back in the day of my degree, I was working at a local authority. And I was working in a particular department and there was a bit of a disagreement about how we approach something. And it was approaching a decision about a particular metric that we would use in relation to a particular business. So the manager at the time of that department said, well, if you don't know Pete, go find out. So in my head, I thought, okay, well, I know who'll know the correct answer here or can provide some additional guidance. It's the regulator. So I emailed the regulator off my local authority account and said, hey, there's been a bit of a conversation that's gone on here, not too sure on what the best option might be. What do you think? And they sent me quite a nice email back, just being like, yeah, what you've said makes perfect sense. Yeah, but like your approach to it is fine. That's all good. Thank you for your time. Thanks for emailing. And if you've got any questions, drop us a line in the future. And I thought that was that. And I'll be perfect. And let me tell you, James, it was not.
It was not. Holy shit.
It was. So I was like, I found out. Like, I know what the answer is. That's all good, literally, James. Like the next week, I was brought in with the head of the council, the head of the department, the head of environmental health, and my tutor, and was basically told, you are lucky that we aren't just finishing your term with us straight away. And I was just like, oh shit, this is not what I thought would happen. Like, at all, literally. Honestly, James, I've never wanted to crawl so much.
Why?
So, I'm confused. So perhaps there's a little bit of context. What I didn't appreciate and was kind of explained to me is that obviously from a regulator point of view, there's always the desire to see unification of thought process and unification of agreement from that point of view. And of course, someone within a team off an official email address basically stating there is not unification, there is discord, or perhaps inferred to be discord or disagreement, does not lend itself well to having a unified approach to setting metrics across a particular local authority area. So that, to be perfectly honest with James, that was maybe the biggest fuck up that I've ever made with sending an email. And was, again, that's that was literally, James, a decade ago. Right. Wow. 4 years after this happened, right, I've seen some friends again in the area. And they brought someone just as from the council and said, oh, this is Pete. And the first thing they said, are you Pete from the email? And I was like, I was literally like, holy shit, this is literally.
No.
Yeah, genuinely. Like, look, I know that there's, you'll see this on like Twitter every now and again. It's when like the intern messes up, they send like a test email out on like a massive major account and stuff, and it's like, I'll blame the intern type of thing. And like, oh, they've sent like a tweet out that shouldn't have been like a company tweet, it should have just been a private tweet type of stuff, and it's like, I'll blame the intern. Yeah, that was my intern moment right behind it, James. Honestly, I just wanted to crawl into a hole and just not go anything. That was my first experience like kind of communicating with a regulator as well, which I genuinely at the time, I just remember thinking, yeah, sweet, I've had a question, I've been told to find out the answer, I've gone to the single source of information that I feel is the authority on it, and I have not, it has not gone like I anticipated it to go. I get it now. Like, I mean, I got it at the time, but like, I understand why I shouldn't have done it. But I tell you what, James, it was a bad day at the office.
Also, just to talk shop, I've just implemented a new policy in Risk Fluent. You're not allowed to talk to the regulator without prior approval from the directors of the business.
And James, I have one thing to say to that, and that's verbal conversations aren't recorded, so that's fine.
Oh dear. Wow. They were three very good examples, Peter.
There you go. So some interesting stories behind it. You know, I'll tell you, we are the sum of our experiences, aren't we, though?
Oh, for sure. Like, I mean, without getting too woke, like, I think ultimately, I know we disagreed about this in the context of like saying the actually physically saying thank you, but I think all the good and the bad defines us, right? So like, as much as I'm not a massive fan of the guy, Tony Robbins, but his I think I was bored one day and I was just like, well, whatever. I put his Netflix show on, I'm Not Your Guru or something like that, and I watched and I was like, oh. And there's one bit in here where he said, like, do you are you proud of what you've achieved? And this woman was like, yeah. And basically, with slight context, she has a terrible relationship with her dad. Her dad been a nasty person or whatever, and a really good relationship with her mum. And she said, do you thank your mum for getting you to where you are? And she was like, yeah, of course I do. And he was like, do you thank your dad for getting you to where you are? She was like, no, why would I? He's an absolute arsehole. And he was like, well, because the bad defines you as much as the good. Now, I've got proof. Not a great relationship with my dad either. So that kind of hit home for me personally. And I will not ever kind of say thank you for the shit that people have done to me. And I wouldn't advise anyone to do that either. I am not your guru and I am not your therapist. Please don't take my advice. But the philosophy of it, I think I've taken away a lot, like in the shit that happens to us just as much defines us. And if we're proud of ourselves as to where we are, then ultimately those fuck ups you've had in the past are a good thing. And then I suppose the only other philosophy that I would probably apply to that is that I use this in with our consulting customers a lot of the time. Everything's a trade-off, right? Everything's a trade-off. Everything you do is a trade-off. If you're doing so, if I'm a good businessman, I'm probably not a great father that week. If I'm a great father that week, I'm probably not a good businessman that week. And there's a really good example of an actress, a famous actress. I can't remember who she says that. Like, you know, think if you think I'm amazing for winning this award, that's like 3 football games that I haven't gone to watch my daughter at or something like that. I can't remember what it was. But everything's a trade-off, right? So ultimately, if you like the good in you, the bad is the just the cost of the good in a way. So like everything's a trade-off. We can't be perfect. So those things are important and they define us just as much. Equally, like to that point of like the difference between you and I am not a details guy. Like I don't like details. I don't have time for it. I have to try really, really fucking. Like the other day I had to read an entire fire strategy. And the amount of concentration that took from me, it was like, nobody fucking talked to me. Phone goes on, like, not disturb and all of this stuff. But to be able to do what I do, it's good that I'm not a details guy. But I need to acknowledge that and have someone that, like you, that is a details guy and fills that void. So everything's a trade-off.
Again, I actually think that's a really good example. We have a topic theme that we said before about workload and organization, right? And one of the questions that we ask is, how do you manage your workload?
Don't answer that question.
No, but the thing is, though, is that you kind of answered it, right, as part of it. I mean, like we were kind of saying before, we bring our whole selves to work. When you're working in a small business, when you're a small business owner, as you've just said there, workload isn't work, it's your life. Like your business as a small business owner is managing, especially if there's consultants listening to this as well. It's not just 9 to 5, right, behind stuff. And it very much sounds, James, that actually when you are leading a business, it's less about time management in isolation as much as it's about energy management and time management at the same time.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
I mean, for what it's worth, like how do you feel like you've changed how you manage your workload relative to both your energy and your time over the years?
I think, you know, when we just recently did a new website, I added a new value to our, was it a principle? Well, that's not good, is it? I think it's a principle. Like I added a new principle to our kind of framework, which was we vocalize problems. And that was very much on reflection of myself. So something we've been unsuccessfully trying to get really working in the business is regular like meetings where we go through everything. So just how I manage that stuff is that if it's not like kind of so for example, if I go like say a month, let's say not even a month, like 2 or 3 weeks without an ops meeting, without systematically going through everything and going, how are they? What are we doing? How are they? What are we doing? Where are we there? What's this? I'm going through it. To me, in my head, that immediately becomes we are overwhelmed and we are struggling and everything is shit and we are failing left, right, and center because it's an unknown. So for me, it's just make everything as much as possible known. And if it's a problem, it doesn't matter because you know about it and you can deal with that And whether you prioritize to deal with it now or later, it doesn't matter. It doesn't really matter, providing that it's known. That's how I deal with a lot of this stuff. Like, and we were talking about kind of dealing with personal problems prior to this. And for me, I probably, the way I was describing it to you earlier, could be quite cold, but like, if you're going through things and you're quite anxious about things that are coming up, for me, it's kind of like, but you know, it's an unknown right now, but we know that we know that it's potentially something, and we're going through the process to deal with that. So when it becomes the next bit of information, just becomes another known. It's the same in the business and how I manage all of that stuff. If it's unknown, I know it's unknown and it sits there, but it sits in my head probably a lot more. When they're known, it's kind of dealt with. So for me, it's just vocalizing stuff, getting it out, getting it somewhere where you can just look at it and go, oh, okay, yeah, I can see that now. It's not great, but at least I fucking know about it. If I know about it, I can do something.
And
does
that enough what it's worth?
Answer the question? I'm not sure.
It does, but it actually quite nicely links back to the first thematic area that we were kind of talking about on setting direction, which is understanding the problem and defining context to deliver the solution that ultimately achieves good outcomes. What you're talking about then through identifying workload and prioritization through identifying knowns and compartmentalizing unknowns helps with setting direction fundamentally through and through. So again, I know that you kind of shared a story in setting direction at what you were like early on in Risk Fluent, but I actually think that the answer that you've now given about workload and prioritization shows how much you've grown through that time period. And I think that when we look at who we are from a safety professional's point of view, we work in uncertainty to a degree. If we didn't have uncertainty, then we wouldn't have a workers imagined versus workers done debate. It would just be work, right?
Yeah.
We constantly work within the remits of uncertainty. And for those who haven't maybe kind of like looked at a risk management matrix and developed a known and unknown matrix within that, that's something that might be worthwhile considering. For reference, a known known is something that you are aware of and you understand, and an unknown unknown is something you're not aware of and don't understand.
Yep.
So contextualizing your thematic areas of work, hell, even your home life, against kind of known knowns and unknown unknowns can be a really good way of not only prioritizing what you do, but also thinking about how you might manage your current workload and future workload as well. I'll be honest with you, James, there's been times where I haven't maybe appreciated the trade-off that you discussed previously. Like, I'll be honest with you, I came out of university swinging. I was like, I'm going to do everything and anything that I possibly can. And it was to the detriment of like all these other areas of my life. There's something that I went through I think I mentioned it in one of the previous podcast episodes on cognitive behavioral therapy, where you make a values list. And you put down like, what's the relative importance of work, say, relative to things like intimate relationships, family, spirituality, recreation, all of the like outdoors time, literally all these different kind of sections that you can put that in. And that can really help prioritize what you do. It can really help actually understand, you can understand off the back of it, the relative importance of what you're doing and how you're doing it. At the expense of what else? So from a personal point of view, massive growth.
Sorry, go on.
No, just saying it's a big growth option. There is just one slight kind of different bit, but it is related to workload and prioritization that I'd like to share, if that's okay.
Can I touch on one thing that you just said really quickly?
Yeah, go for it.
It won't be long. So you kind of said there, like you came out of uni swinging and like to detriment of other things, right? I listened to the World of Work podcast. I haven't listened to a while actually, but I used to live on that podcast. It's a very good podcast. I'll link it below. And their website is really good as well. Loads of resources. I actually went on it and did an episode. So that was kind of a big moment for me because they were like a huge influence on my career. So when I think I dropped her a message and said like, hey, I just want to say like, you have defined my entire career. Like, I love what you do. She was like, hey, you want to come on podcast? So I was like, oh! But anyway, where was I going with this? I've got distracted. So Jane, who's on that podcast, there's one where she says, and I'm going to butcher what she said, but essentially she kind of said, it's the choice doesn't matter. It's the effort after the choice. So we all get hung up on the choice. Is this the right choice or the wrong choice? There is no right or wrong choice. It's a choice. So you make the choice based on the information you have and the gut feeling and all of that stuff, right? And you make a decision. You'll never know if it's right or wrong, providing you put the fucking effort in afterwards to make it right. So it's not the choice that matters. It's the effort after it that matters. And I kept that with me for a very long time. We have to make a choice. Let's do a bit of work to try and understand the context. Let's get the information, right? And another kind of add-on, bolt-on to that point, I never really got on with the book, Chimp Paradox. Like, I got the principle, but I felt the book was a bit overcomplicated. But I did listen to a podcast interview of him on Ali Abdul's podcast. And the guy that wrote the book was on there.
Yeah, yeah.
And he said, I thought that was more powerful than the book, but maybe that's just my way of learning. I learn a lot more from conversations, so it just made sense. But anyway, he said in there, most people make decisions which are emotion-led, informed by facts. We should make decisions that are facts led, informed by emotion. So if we combine those two things together, right, in the moment you have a choice to make, no, it's not right or wrong, and then you gather the facts, you listen to your emotion, and you make a decision, and then the effort afterwards makes it the right decision. So then looking backwards, you can then reflect on that and go, what would I change? There's still not a right or wrong decision. It's just a reflection. So therefore, it just becomes more facts that influence the next decision. So therefore, you can look back on all of your shit in the past and say, none of it was a wrong decision. It was just a decision. And I kept both of those with me for a very, very long time.
I love that. Gather facts, listen to emotions, make decisions.
Yeah. And then the effort after it to make it right.
Effort after.
But then I suppose you could then go, like, you don't want to have cognitive dissonance where you're just not listening. Like, don't be afraid to make another choice where you go, it wasn't right and I need to change it. Like, just fucking then make that choice. So don't be, I don't know, I signed up to this gym because I thought it was the right gym and it turned out to be wrong, but I convinced my partner that it was the right one, so I'm just going to keep fucking going or whatever. There's new facts now. You've gone to that gym. New facts are changing that decision. So make another decision, adjust an effort.
Exactly. Don't tie yourself to a 5-year safety plan if 3 years in it's not working like you intended to, and you're going to keep going.
Exactly.
If it's not working, make the change.
Exactly. Vocalize problems. I fucked up. This is not working. We're going to readjust because I think it will work. So I think there's a lot there in what they said, but I'd pretty much use all of those philosophies to guide my life.
I love it. And I think that having that type of philosophy is really strong. I have a similar one, James, but it's by nowhere near as academic. Are you familiar with the Batman films with Christian Bale?
Yes.
Right.
Which ones?
The ones with Christian Bale in as Batman.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right. Not the good ones. Not the classics. But
No. James, we'll park that. Let's put that on the car park for conversation. Let's another
put that
time.
In the Star, Trek, Star Wars and Batman conversation.
That we will, right? There's a scene in where Bruce is on the floor and he's getting picked up by Alfred. And it's a high intensity.
Why do we fall, Bruce?
Yes. Why do we fall, Bruce?
Yeah.
Not to learn how to pick ourselves up again.
Yeah. So, not to be a geek, but that's not from the films. What? That's from the original comics.
But it's in the films, though, isn't it?
Yes. But it's if we're going to say where it's from, let's get it correct. Okay. Let's get the reference correct, Peter Jenkins. I'm not a details guy unless we're talking about geeky shit. In which case, let's get the detail.
You are detailed orientated. I see where your energy lies, James. I see where it lies.
That is from the original comics. But yes, you are right. Why do we fall, Bruce?
Why do we fall, Bruce, if not to pick ourselves up again?
It's a beautiful line.
I love it. I kept it with me ever since I'd seen it, because it is literally, it's never about the thing that's gone wrong. The thing that goes wrong doesn't define us. It's about our actions, it's about our reflections, and it's about the effort that we put in afterward.
Yeah.
Combine that with this phrase, and I've mentioned this to you before now. People have great ideas every day, but it's the execution that counts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a lot that fits in there with ownership. There's a lot that fits in there, like we're saying, about reflection, recognizing when things aren't working, adapting, pivoting, taking it in a different direction, identifying that if we don't know, for example, in the context of the known and unknowns, that we can maybe micro-experiment to find out, gather the facts, listen to the emotion, use the emotional intelligence that underpins this entire profession, make the decisions and go back at it. I mean, there was a big maybe turning point for me where I kind of thought that I'd got things a bit wrong before as a health and safety professional, because I was always focused on facilitating health and safety work. And that's kind of like not the work of safety, but like just safety work, right? Literally just safety work. Doing the audits, doing like the near miss hazard reporting, engaging audits and site reviews and team reviews and stuff like that. And I always thought that that was about time management. And actually, if I could just try and facilitate time management, that'd be fine. But actually, I'd got it wrong. My pivot was changing the inputs of all of that to recognize when people were doing them during a shift, right? It was a 24-hour operation, two split shifts, 12 hours each, right? And I realized that people would naturally gravitate to doing things at the times that they had the most energy through the day, rather than for when they had the most time to do them through the day.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest with you, in one of the businesses I worked in from a management position, I pivoted my entire approach from managing time of safety work to managing energy for safety work. Yeah. And the amount, the increases that I got in reporting engagement, the quality that came up from them shot up almost overnight behind it. So as much as we think about kind of workload and organization being about prioritization and managing workload, there's so much in there, James, from the safety profession about if we can manage energy rather than necessarily managing time on a working day, that there's so many benefits that we can have as a result of that.
And there's a lot in that as well when we really start to get into like flexible working, three rotating shifts, all of this stuff, like forcing
even like circadian rhythms. It's huge. It's a massive part.
So we literally spoke about this, me and Sherry, yesterday, and it was actually about you. So my circadian rhythm and your circadian rhythm, as they say, is very different. I'm an early riser and I start to dip off at about 3 o'clock quite dramatically. And you're a late riser and your work, like your kind of energy ramps up when mine starts to drop off, which is perfect, right? But ultimately, like, it's interesting because I'm like, when you're like just ramping up, kind of just, you know, start getting into the day, I'm like, right, let's fucking go, Peter. And then just as you're like, yeah, let's fucking go, James, I'm like, and I'm starting to really drop down. So it's really interesting. So I was kind of, so the reason why we're talking about it is we're obviously recruiting a new consultant, hopefully. Yeah. We were talking about work hours and we were talking to HR about kind of what do we put in the contract. And I was like, well, kind of, yeah, the core hours are 9 to 5, but to be honest, how do I deal with someone who works late? So like we've had a couple of examples where like you yourself has worked late, but what I don't want to do is shut down if like say Pete doesn't get out of bed till 10 o'clock, but actually works till 7-8 o'clock. Like if that's his rhythm and that's his life rhythm as well as his own personal rhythm, then like, who am I to say that's not right and you have to work in these hours? Like, yes, we've got customers who work in a set amount of time and stuff like that. So, yes, there is a bit of that contractual requirement. But ultimately, true flexible working, I think, is quite hard. But there's a lot to say to that. I am very much conscious of time, though, before we go into that rabbit hole. I literally have, like, 2 minutes and then I need to shoot. Say one thing. We need to have an episode. I know we've got the next 2 or 3 episodes planned, but I would like to insert an episode in between one of those where we talk about taking inspiration from fiction, because I think we touched on that quite a lot today. It's something I'm very passionate about. I think I've done a podcast on it before, but I'd be really interested for us to both jointly discuss it because I take a lot from fiction that I apply to work all the time.
Yeah. Oh, no, I completely agree, James. I think, there's a lot in that episode and a lot about where as a profession we can get inspiration from as well. So I'd be well.
And I'll
get
to geek the fuck out the entire episode.
I love it. I genuinely do. I mean, James, there's so much that we've kind of covered here. I know that we've kind of gone through communication and relationships. We've gone through setting direction. We've gone through workload and organization. We've talked about some of the contemporary challenges that we find in health and safety. We've talked about some of the lessons that we've learned from certainly early on in our career, some of the reflections that we've had through the contemporary bringing your whole self to work. And I absolutely love the point that you finished on about flexibility. Yes, flexible working in its kind of like truest form is difficult to achieve, but from the research that I've seen so far, the modern professional doesn't want autonomy in their role as much as they would prefer to have flexibility. And I think that if we were to say what's going to define the desires of professionals this year and next year, genuinely, James, flexibility is number one.
Yeah.
100% is number one. And if there's people listening to this thinking my business isn't letting me kind of be flexible with it, if it's not on your risk matrix, then forgiving people potential flight risks, having brain drain as a result of a lack of flexibility, it should be.
And I think the knock-on effect of that is increased diversity at work as well, because when we start talking about primary caregivers, so whoever is the primary caregiver in the household, you know, if that we literally had this conversation with a candidate the other week, like if they've got to take the kids to like swimming or whatever it is, but like ultimately they've also had to start late or something, like it's about kind of working around that kind of thing and stop managing people from clocking in at 9 and clocking out at 5 and just start managing people with like good KPIs, good workplace, work kind of work prioritization, so to speak. So like, yes, you've got customers or jobs that need to be done in a set amount of time. Then the prioritize the workload. So you go, I'm doing this right now, but I know I'm going to work late tonight because of X, Y, and Z. I'm going to take this thing and I'm going to do that late because these things, maybe not the priority, but ultimately they are time sensitive. So therefore they kind of, so it's all about the changes, the way we prioritize and the way we plan work and all of that stuff. But I do think that's where we really start to open the door to like working around primary caregivers, increasing diversity at work and so on.
Yeah, totally. I completely agree. I tell you what, I'd love to touch on that another time as well, James, because I think there's a lot in there. Yeah, I know, but it's what makes the modern world of work. And I reckon that genuinely, I think, should be a massive talking point, especially in the context of the health, in health and safety.
Mm, two very good podcasts for that kind of thing, the World of Work podcast and also Sleep, Eat, Work, Repeat. That's very good. So Sleep, Eat, Work, Repeat talk about new like work and flexible working a lot.
Yeah.
So definitely check those two podcasts out for that. Cool. Okay, right. We need to wrap it up. I need to go to a networking gig and I'd like to at least give my daughter a kiss and cuddle before I go. So apologies if you come on trying to listen to safety and we spend the first 30 minutes just chatting pure shit. I'd like to say that won't happen again, but I'm pretty sure it will. Hopefully you got something out of the episode. I think that's really it. The next episode, I don't really know which one we're going to pick, but keep your eye out. Is there any other shout outs I need to let people know?
Go on. I don't want to interrupt. Sorry, go. Carry on.
I was just saying, if you are interested in Risk Assessor, we've started doing live monthly lives. So keep your eye out, follow the Risk Assessor page because we're doing that. And like, if you haven't already, check out the Risk Fluent website because you've got the scorecards on there, whether it's technical health and safety or it's like transformational kind of risk management, cultural stuff, a couple of good scorecards on there. So yeah, Risk Assessor, riskassessor.net, Risk Fluent, riskfluentltd.com. That's probably it. For me, Pete, what were you going to say?
I was going to say big shout out to Chez again, just for her editing.
Oh, totally. 100%. She'll hate that we say this and she'll probably cut this out, but ultimately Rebound and Safety would not exist if it was not for Sherry. She'd been editing this shit since pretty much day one. I always did the podcast and then she did YouTube and now she does everything. So it wouldn't exist without Shaz. So,
Jerry, thank you. Shaz. Nice one. Cool. Thanks for listening, everyone. See you in a bit.
Bye-bye.
Hold up. The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the host and its guests and do not necessarily reflect the position of the companies. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are examples only based on limited and dated open source information and should not be utilised in real life as the only solution available. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the companies. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, or otherwise, without prior written permission from James McPherson.